Setting Every Community Up for Retirement Enhancement Act, or the SECURE Act, was passed in December 2019 and became a law as of January 1, 2020. The legislation created changes for long-term retirement savings and has financial impacts for Americans at every age. And then, SECURE 2.0 Act was signed into law in late 2022, delivering dozens of new retirement-related provisions. These changes build on the original SECURE Act of 2019, which altered the rules around how you can save and withdraw money from your retirement accounts. SECURE 2.0 Act addresses additional issues related to retirement and savings that were not part of the original SECURE Act, creating new flexibility and accessibility to help individuals plan for a more secure future. All right. Already it's getting too wordy for me. That's why Paul is here today. From the home base in Brookfield, Wisconsin, welcome to the latest episode of Inside Connect and Simplify, sponsored by the Benefit Companies. Roger here, human capital management consultant, marketing guy, and today we're bringing the detail of SECURE 2.0 down into words we can understand, and what is relevant to businesses with a retirement plan, and businesses without a retirement plan. Joining me today is the only person on our team who has read the SECURE 2.0 Act in its entirety, well, at least the section that impacts our industry and our clients. Paul Dowd, Director of Business Development and Retirement Industry Veteran, has read all 400-plus pages and is here to give you what you need to know in easy-to-understand language and in a timeline that makes sense. Hey, Paul, welcome back.
Thanks, Roger. It's good to see you again. Good to be here with another podcast and get into what could actually be beneficial. You know, that's the nice thing to know about the SECURE 2.0 Act. Is that a lot of industry experts actually feel this is something the government has done that could help people over time. So we're excited about that fact.
So it is legislation and written in lawyer speak, so I would have no interest in reading this document, but you have, and you're here today to distill this law into the nuts and bolts of the impact on businesses. So again, not only businesses with a retirement plan in place, this impacts businesses without a plan because, well, I'll let you go there, Paul, but maybe start with what the goal of the original SECURE Act was or is. The government is concerned about our retirement planning and wants us to save more money, right?
Actually, right. I mean, the government, as well as anybody in the country who studies the situation regarding our finances as a country, knows that over time, we want people to rely less on Social Security and more on their own savings and things like 401k plans that can help them build money for retirement. So a couple of things to know is that we see that this new SECURE 2.0 Act is designed to help expand participant coverage. In other words, get more people able to put away money on a tax-deferred basis, help those participants who put the money away preserve the income that they have, and then simplify, which you wouldn't believe that coming from the government, but the idea really is to simplify some of the plan rules and administrative procedures that might have dissuaded some businesses from putting a 401k plan in the first place.
Okay, so the act is, well, not coming at us, it's already here. And it also goes out in stages. So what's in effect now and what's coming down the line? Let's start with now. What's happening in 2023?
And actually, Roger, I really like the way you're asking that question because in going through all those pages, what we notice is there's a lot in there, but it gets implemented over time. So there's some things we need to know about today, some things we need to know, hey, these are coming down the road. Another thing to know is that everybody in the industry is aware that the Department of Labor, the Internal Revenue Service, other government agencies are still going to be giving out interpretive guidelines on how to implement these. So just because something's a law doesn't mean the accountants and record keepers have figured out how to implement it and put it together yet. But having said that, I think you're right on track. Let's go through this in terms of year by year, what plan sponsors need to know about what's coming, started with what's in place today, because we're sitting here in 2023. So with 2023, a couple things to know about. First and foremost, is that the rules regarding required minimum distributions are changing. And just for everybody's sake, a required minimum distribution is the distribution people must take from retirement plans when they reach a certain age. The government basically has given people a tax break on a lot of retirement plans. In other words, they've given up some of their tax income. Eventually, they want their income. So they put rules in place that require people to take money out of their retirement plans. And you can put those in another account. You don't have to spend it, but you have to take it out of the account, which gives the government a chance to get their tax money that they want. The good thing is that starting in 2023, so people who attained age 72 after December 31st of 2022, the age for the required minimum distribution is now 73. And as we said, things go into effect over stages. So this required minimum distribution is actually going to have another effect in 2033. So way out in 2033, we're scheduled to have the required minimum distribution age go up to 75. So what this means is that for people who have saved money in a variety of different ways, maybe they have pensions coming in, maybe they have other savings, maybe it's not in their best interest to withdraw money from their account and pay taxes today. This rule gives those people the opportunity to delay that withdrawal, which means delay paying taxes on the money. The other thing about this required minimum distribution change, which I think a lot of people are excited about, is there's currently a 50% excise tax on money that should have been withdrawn for a required minimum distribution but wasn't withdrawn. In other words, if somebody just didn't get to it, didn't withdraw it, they could pay a 50% penalty tax. So that rule is being changed to drop immediately to a 25% excise tax. So we don't like paying excise taxes and we want people to not ever have to pay those, but that is a big drop in the penalty. And the penalty drops actually to 10% if you take the necessary required minimum distribution by the end of the second year following the year it was due. So I'll leave that up to your record keepers and the folks you work with to help you get those rules and regs straight. But the important thing to know is you never want to miss a required minimum distribution. But now, if you happen to miss a required minimum distribution, maybe there was some administrative error, you have much easier ways of recovering from that problem. So let's see, ready to move on to the next thing, I think, is that we also have required minimum distributions for Roth 401k accounts. So an important thing to know is a Roth IRA is a way people can save money for retirement, and an IRA, which there's limitations on income with those, but if you put money in a Roth IRA, you pay tax now on that money. You pay your income tax now, but you have the potential of withdrawing that money income tax free in the future. And for the Roth IRAs, there was no required minimum distribution for those. However, they had not codified the laws in the 401k world to make that equal. So part of the change is that required minimum distributions are going to be waived for Roth 401ks now. So people that are in a 401k and have the ability to contribute via Roth contributions can actually also take advantage of the fact that there's no required minimum distributions for those. The one thing too for people listening to this meeting is to know that if you have a Roth 401k and you roll it to a Roth IRA, which is permissible, you need to check on the Roth 5-year rule so you understand the withdrawal rules regarding Roth IRAs. We won't get into those today, but just know they're out there. You need to be aware of them. They can still be a very, very powerful, beneficial tool for retirement, but you need to know that. The other thing to know is that change from required minimum distributions to not requiring those is going to kick in starting in 2024. So this is something that's actually happening in 2024, but the exception applies to required minimum distributions required before 24, but not required to be paid until 2024 or later. So bottom line is, if you're in your 70s, if you have a Roth 401k feature to your 401k, check on getting that taken care of, and maybe you don't have to make a withdrawal out of that. One more thing that we wanted to hit on for 2023 is that the government is now encouraging people to get into retirement plans as they always have, but they're really putting something behind it this time. They're actually put in a rule that says companies can give minimal, they call it de minimis, financial incentives to participants to encourage participants. So maybe like a low dollar gift card is what they suggest. So these de minimis incentives can actually help people make that decision to join the 401k plan, which we know is going to be beneficial for them in the long run. And then the next thing, the last thing we have for 2023 is that distributions are allowed for federally declared disasters. So up until now, retirement plans could always make hardship withdrawals available. They could also make loans available. However, there are significant restrictions on getting that money out and what can be done with that money. So there's new rules regarding federally declared disasters that allow people to take up to $22,000 as a distribution without a penalty. So I think one of the reasons why the government is putting this in place is because they want to encourage people to contribute to plans. And some people in the past were reluctant to contribute to plans if they thought, hey, maybe I'll need this money someday and I can't get it because it's in the 401k. So if there's a true emergency, federally declared disaster, you can get at that money. So that's pretty much what we have for 2023.
Okay, so a couple things come to mind, and if this is not the right time for that, I understand. But so we talked about delaying withdrawals. We've talked about pushing those withdrawal dates to older ages, if you will, mm-hmm. to 73 and then 75 down the road. I'm assuming that the allowable contribution limits, which are typically increase every year, that's going to continue. We didn't go there before, but is that something we anticipate?
Yes.
That actually, those numbers will keep going up?
So there's two numbers that are really important to what you just talked about. It's number one, how much a typical person who's in a 401k can contribute to the plan every year. And the IRS sets that limit and they can adjust it for inflation. They have been adjusting it for inflation. So for 2023, that number went up to $22,500. The other number to know is that there's a thing called a catch-up contribution that people are allowed to make if they're over 50 and if their plan allows for that. And that number has also increased for 2023 to, I believe it's $7,500. But we're going to get into that in a minute because this Secure 2.0 Act made some significant changes to the way catch-up contributions can be used in the future. So it's a great thing you asked that question now, Roger, because without waiting, people who are over 50 can take advantage of these new numbers right away. But there are things coming to make it even better in the next few years.
Okay, so that makes sense to me. And then one other thing that came to mind was, so we're talking about a Roth IRA, or Roth 401ks. You're talking about regular, quote unquote, 401ks. You talked about catch-up contributions, and you talked about increased limits. And so the record, well, let's be clear, the payroll department, whoever your payroll department is, they got to be absolutely spot on with tracking all of these buckets of dollars or there's going to be a problem down the road. And maybe this isn't the right year. We're in 2023. Can you talk on that for a minute?
Yeah, there's two points to what you said. Number one is all of these rules and regs are written by legislative people. They get input in terms of what should be in here. But the bottom line is whatever comes out from these regulations, the record keepers, the lawyers, all the people in the industry, they have to figure out how to actually implement these. That's why at the beginning I said we're expecting more guidance to come in the future. But having said that, it's also very important to know that to make the best use of these changes, it is good to make sure your financial advisor, your advisor to your 401k, is monitoring your providers to ensure they have the resources to implement these changes. A good thing is that, and I'll get to it in a few minutes, I've got the exact date down the line here, but the government is giving companies time to change their official documents related to these changes, so they don't have to do it today, but you're allowed to put the changes in place today, if they're allowed today. In other words, go with it, run with it, operate your plan the best you can with these new rules and regs, and get around to making the changes within the time frame they said that's allowed, so the documentation matches what you're doing.
So that makes sense to me, and I was just, again, thinking about the payroll side of this. and how important it is that those two vendors, or in our case, we're the same vendor, we can do both in our own house, just manage that information, because mm-hmm. there are so many different layers now.
Yeah.
When before we started these things, it was like one.
Right.
It was your contribution and your employer's contribution. That was about it. But now we've got all these different buckets and places that the money could go into. And how do you keep track of all that? And if your vendor isn't up to speed on that, or can't adjust or be nimble about that, you're going to run into problems. So that just jumped into my head. So thanks for talking about that for a second. Okay, so let's go on to 2024 now. What's the big hitters? What are the high points we need to know about for what goes into play in 2024?
All right, so we'll talk about, when I say 2024, for anybody technical who's, you know, keeping track of the scores here, what we're talking about is these are rules and regs effective for plan years beginning after December 31st, 2023. So that's why I'm calling it 2024. First thing that we want to know about is that plans often have to pay administrative fees for all the employees that are in their plan, which makes sense. It's logical. But the plan sponsor, the company running the plan, those of you listening to this meeting, if you're running a plan, you're running a plan to benefit your key employees and give them an incentive to stay with you. When an employee terminates from your service, you no longer necessarily have that need to be giving them an incentive to stay with you. So in cases where you have low balance employees, in other words, employees with less than $5,000 in your account, it often does not make sense to maintain their account. And the government has given companies breaks where you can work with a record keeper, work with your administrator, and get those people out of the plan. There are rules and regs in place to make sure this is done well, which means help them roll into a IRA or some vehicle that's tax deferred. But up till the recent past here, up until this rule change, the number was $5,000. In other words, if a person had $5,000 or less, the company could automatically force them out of the plan. You might have to force them into an IRA or something like that to protect their tax deferred status, but that's the change. So for 2024, that $5,000 number is going up to $7,000. So the net thing for that is that plan sponsors can often look at saving a few bucks on terms of their administrative costs if they're paying money for people that are no longer with their firm. So the next thing we want to talk about is catch-ups. You mentioned catch-ups a few minutes ago in terms of that. And I think catch-ups are really important if you're over 50. You are allowed to put in catch-ups provided your plan makes that available. And that catch-up contribution is allowed no matter how the plan does in terms of testing. What I mean by that is certain highly compensated employees, people making over about $150,000 a year, there's been cases where those people, because their company has to pass government tests, people who are highly compensated are limited in terms of what they can put in their retirement plan. These catch-up contributions operate outside of that testing rule. So you might be limited. Let's say your normal government limit is $22,500 a year. Your employer might come back to you and say, hey, based on a test, you're only allowed to put in $20,000 in the regular plan. Okay, fine. But you can put in the extra catch-up contribution, the $7,500 contribution, if your plan allows that, even if they had this testing issue about some other area. One thing to know, though, for 2024 is this is a big change to me. Highly compensated employees starting in 2024, your contributions, catch-up contributions, can only be Roth contributions going forward. So in the past, you could have your catch-up contributions go pre-tax or they could go post-tax. If you go pre-tax, it comes off your income today. It lowers your income today, but you'll pay taxes eventually down the road. If you go Roth, you'll pay taxes on the income you make today, but you'll have no taxes on the income side when you take that withdrawal in the future. The government has switched over and said highly compensated people who are making catch-up contributions starting in 2024 forward will have those contributions go automatically onto the Roth side of the plan. And if you wonder why the government did that, it's pretty simple. Having it set up this way gives the government a chance to get revenue today. They get tax income today on the money going in for catch-up contributions for highly compensated employees. So it's a big deal. It's a big change. But at the same time, I think a lot of people, when they look at the rules related to Roth contributions, they might decide that's actually the best thing for them in the end, too, to keep that government tax-free status when they retire. Another big thing is that we talked about catch-up contributions changing to $7,500 for 2023, but there's another big change for after December 31st, 2023. And this goes right to what you said, Roger, a few minutes ago about how it's good. You need to have providers who know what they're doing. This one's kind of complicated. And for those of you listening, don't feel like you have to memorize this. Just know you want a provider that can handle this for you. But starting in December 31st, 2023, individuals who are 60 to 63 can put in more than the typical catch-up contributions. In other words, there's going to be another breakpoint. So 50 is the first breakpoint. But people who are 60 to 63 can put in $10,000 or 150% of the regular catch-up contributions. So if this rule was in place today, we're talking about somebody who would normally be limited to $7,500 being able to put in somewhere in the neighborhood of $11,000 into this system. Of course, usually the people that can afford to do that are the highly compensated people, so that money would be going in out of the Roth side. But the Roth contributions would eventually be able to come out tax-free according to the way the government's set up today. So any questions, comments on that so far?
No, I'm good. I understand.
All right. So 2024, as we see, has quite a bit of things coming down that you need to know about. But this is another one, big, popular, politically hot topic is the treatment of student loans. So this is something that's going to be effective again in 2024. So companies are going to be able to work with their record keepers and set up a system where student loan payments made outside of the retirement plan, in other words, a person who's paying off student loan debt, can have those contributions count as if they went in the 401k from a matching point of view. So that you pay off your debt, but you actually can get matched on that money, and that matching contribution would be going into your 401k. So in other words, you're paying off your student debt, but you're also growing your 401k at the same time. So this could be powerful for people that have made that very difficult decision. You know, you graduate, you've got a lot of debt, you have to decide, do I start saving for retirement or do I pay off this debt? That's a hard call. Now participants might be able to make the decision of, I'm going to do both, pay off some student loan and get matching contributions at least going into the 401k. And then one more provision coming in, because we talked about the idea earlier that some people don't join 401ks because they're afraid that they might need this money and they know that this money is for retirement. Now, this provision I'm going to tell you about is optional. You don't have to put this in 2024, but you can set your plan up to allow participants to kind of have an emergency pull button. They can withdraw up to $1,000. They can repay it within 3 years. And they have to repay it before they take another one of these $1,000 emergency withdrawals. And the emergency distribution is exempted from the IRS 10% premature penalty distribution tax. Bottom line is, typically people in a retirement plan, even if they take a hardship withdrawal, which might be allowed by some companies, in some cases they might be paying income tax and penalty tax on that money they're withdrawing. With the new optional provision for this emergency withdrawal, people could take $1,000, pay it back within 3 years so they get back their tax deferred status, and they avoid the 10% premature distribution penalty. And then one more thing for 2024. I almost forgot about this one. But again, this is an optional provision. The idea is help people really find the money. Sometimes when we do meetings for retirement plan participants, and I've done like 10,000 meetings for participants. When you do these meetings, some people really have legitimate concerns. How can I have money to pay my rent, pay my mortgage, pay the car bills, and put away money for retirement? And that's a legitimate concern. So they're actually setting up to where companies using the same systems that we're using for the 401k can actually have emergency savings available for non-highly compensated employees. So generally what we're talking about, people making under 150. And by the way, I say generally because the government changes the definition of what's highly compensated, you know, sometimes every year it's based on inflation. But this is different than this emergency pull of $1,000 that would be allowed from your 401k. So participants will be able to make a contribution in a Roth style, so that means they pay taxes now, goes into the system. It's maximum of $2,500 that can go into this account. One magazine, a very popular magazine called Plan Sponsor Magazine, called this the sidecar account. So if you hear of people putting sidecar accounts into their 401k plans in 2024, this is what they're talking about. The thing with the sidecar account is you cannot add money beyond the $2,500 number. So it's supposed to be a modest size account to help you cover emergency situations. But the cool thing is you'll be able to take up to 4 withdrawals per plan year, not subject to fees or charges. And so this might help people who were going to avoid joining the plan make that decision that, you know what, I can join the plan because I know if I have an emergency, I've got these two different ways to pull money and get that done. One thing to know again, though, is that this provision and the emergency pull provision are optional. Companies will be able to decide whether they want to implement those.
Okay, so those last two items that you just talked about are now giving the participant a chance to actually access the money without the other penalties or the original penalties that were sitting out there.
Correct.
And so it takes away the, as you described, the fear of not being able to get to the money, because when, you know, go back 5 years, 401k plans, pretty restrictive as to how to get to the money.
Right.
Okay, so that's the goal here, is to give them an opportunity to get to it without layers or extra taxes and penalties. Okay, that makes sense. What about what's coming in the next year, 2025? What do you got?
All right, so let's talk about 2025. I think some big news for 2025 is that any new 401k or 403b plan established after December 31st, 2024 is going to be required to include automatic enrollment and automatic escalation features. And we'll talk about what that means in a second. The big thing to think about is the government has known, industry has known for a long time, that the best way to help people save for retirement is to automate the 401k as much as possible. So what's going to happen is plans are going to be encouraged, required, whatever it takes, to set up automatic enrollment. In other words, if somebody's hired and they meet the eligibility requirements, they're going to be having a preset number that they can contribute to the plan without having to make any active movement on their part. They'll always have the option of what to do. So that's an important thing. It's coming. I think a few things to know here. Let's talk about some definitions, though. Automatic enrollment means somebody's hired, and once they're eligible, if they do nothing, they're actually automatically contributing to the plan out of their paycheck a preset number. The numbers that are going to be set according to the rules right now are somewhere between 3% and 10%, and include on top of that number an automatic escalation of at least 1% up to somewhere between 10 and 15%. So a company might set 3% as their automatic enrollment number. And what we found is that if every year you bump up what somebody contributes to their plan by 1%, so the next year's 4% or 5% or 6%, people tend to stick with it. Over 85% of the people out there stick with that program because they like seeing their balance rise. It helps them plan for retirement and build that account. Couple catch-all provisions here to make sure this is okay and works with people and we don't get too many complaints is the government says that companies can unwind any automatically enrolled person within 90 days without any penalties. In other words, if a person is automatically enrolled and then comes back to the plan sponsor and says, oh, no, I really didn't want to do that, they can get their money out of the plan. We're going to encourage them to stick with the plan and tell them all the good reasons why it would be great to be part of the plan. But they do have that fail-safe within the first 90 days. Now, there are some plans that are going to be excluded from this provision, which would be governmental plans, church plans, and small employers with 10 or fewer people, and new employers that have only been around as an entity for 5 years or less than 3 years. So that's the big thing, the automatic enrollment, automatic escalation. Another thing I just thought is nice is that the government's putting in place a savings lost and found. Believe it or not, people sometimes forget they have 401k accounts. There's money there for them. They quit their job, they get let go, whatever the reason is, and maybe they don't realize that even if they're terminated, laid off, whatever, they usually have a vested amount, money that belongs to them. And the companies want people to have this money. So the government has directed that the Department of Labor, in consultation with the IRS, is going to establish an online searchable database known as the Retirement Savings Lost and Found. The net result of all this is that people are going to be able to find their money if they left a plan and the plan sponsor is having trouble finding them. You know, people move, change addresses, change phone numbers. It can be hard to find all that. So with 2025, another thing to note is that individuals will now be eligible as of 1 year of service or the completion of 24 months with two 12-month periods with 500 hours of service. So in the past, companies set up eligibility for their employees. In other words, you have to work a certain amount of time to be part of the plan, because as we said earlier, there's costs to having a plan. Well, the government wants to ensure that certain people that have been excluded in the past, such as maybe part-time employees, if they really are putting in some significant time, they want those employees to be allowed to be part of the plan. So let me just give you a warning here. If you have a record keeper you're working with, a third-party administrator you're working with, remember this particular change doesn't go into effect until 2025. But the government made some changes regarding these areas, even with that original SECURE Act that you mentioned, Roger, a while ago. So companies need to know that their providers are helping them track who should be part of the plan. And just because a person is categorized as part-time doesn't mean they're automatically excluded. So we want to watch that. We want to make sure that people who are eligible are getting in the plan. Now, some of these changes don't apply to people who are part of collective bargaining agreements or non-resident aliens. So there are some exceptions, but those are the big things to know for 2025.
And so the plan runs till 2033. I don't expect you to go through everything, but is there any high points there that we need to be aware of?
The fun one for me in 2033 is the fact that that required minimum distribution goes up to 75 from the immediate age change to 73 that was put in place right away. So that will come. There are other changes. And as you mentioned, the whole entire act is about 400 pages, which is part of a bigger 1,600-page bill. So there are items in there related to people, things that you might want to know. But today, for the sake of time, we're focusing on what we think plan sponsors need to know in regard to their retirement plans and things that they might want to be asking their advisors or contacting somebody for help with. How do you get this stuff implemented? Because it's one thing to know it's coming. It's another thing to actually put it in place and make it available for your employees.
Okay, that makes sense. So we as a company, we're meeting with our retirement plan clients right now and going forward, making sure they know what's coming. And so they can plan, of course. And we're also meeting with our other clients who don't use us for a retirement plan, or they don't even have a retirement plan, to get them up to speed. What are we doing to help our clients?
First thing we're doing to help our clients is, I think, making sure a lot of them know that there's a trend in the country among many states, up to 16 now, mandate retirement plans for participants. So some states have their own state program people can join. But there's a big incentive in the industry right now that if you don't have a plan for your participant, for your employees, you need to get a plan in place. So Wisconsin currently does not have that mandate internally. But if you're a Wisconsin employer and you have employees in other states that may be affected by these rules, you need to know that and make sure you're complying with those rules that might affect you from other states, such as Illinois is one of those states that mandates retirement plan access for people.
And to be clear on that, too, when we did the research on this, every state's got their own set of rules number of employees and time, all that stuff. So talk about that for a second.
Yeah. So some states have it down to like two employees. If you have two employees working in that state, they might be mandated to have access to the retirement plan. The state retirement plans are all set up under a Roth type setup, not the traditional pre-tax setup. So the state systems might be ones where when you look at what you're offering, it would be more beneficial, more appealing to your employee base to go ahead and set up a traditional 401k like we've been talking about here today, because that would qualify. In other words, if you had to make a notice that you have such and such a plan available to your participants, a 401k would qualify for that plan.
So if you're not a client with us right now, you want to learn more about SECURE 2.0, what should you do?
First thing, give us a call. We're here to help you. The goal for this podcast was to be educational. We really want to help people do the best they can to make their companies good. We appreciate so many employers every day going in and doing their thing that makes them a good company, that makes this country and this state a better place. But let us help you. We've got experts. I've been in the industry over 30 years working with retirement plans. I work very closely with Neil Decker and a team that can help you with any aspect of looking at your plan. For example, so this is something that people might not know. The government does not have any set time frame on when you need to benchmark your plan. And what I mean by that is, how often do you go out and see if you're paying a good fee, if you're paying too much? How often do you go out and make sure that the services you're receiving, for example, all these changes that we're talking about today, will your record keeper be capable of implementing these as they come to be available? Just because the rule says it can be done doesn't mean it can be done if your technology's not caught up. So one of the things we like to offer to people is to do a benchmark of their plan, see where they are, see what the industry offers, make sure they're getting what they need to get. And if they need to make a change, we can, of course, help them walk through that change. And a little scary thing for me is that I did hear of the Department of Labor visiting a company once. They could document what they were paying their current provider, but they couldn't document that they had done a good due diligence job managing their benchmarking process. In other words, they didn't know what was out there in the industry to compare, and so they got in trouble. So with that, I think that's the big thing. Let us help you out. Let us do a benchmarking for you if that will help your plan. And then, you know, we'll tell you the right answer. That's the bottom line. We're going to tell you if what you have is the best thing for you.
And so what caught my attention in that statement too is us taking the risk out of your hands. And that's really one of the goals we have, especially in the retirement plan space. Well, HR is another great aspect of that, where we're always trying to take risk out of your hands, and we'll take that risk on. When we talked in a recent meeting, we were talking about one of the other services that we offer in the retirement plan space, and I'm not gonna try to describe this, but I do know that it's a service we offer that really does almost eliminate the risk, and we bring it all on ourselves. And I think the number that sticks in my head is 316. Tell me what that means and why it's important.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for asking that, Roger, because that is a big development in the industry. And that is, just to put it back for a second, I've been in meetings where I ask a plan sponsor committee, in other words, the people running the retirement plan, who in this room are the fiduciaries on this plan? And sometimes 70% of the people that are fiduciaries don't know they're a fiduciary. And why is that a big deal? Because if you're a fiduciary and you break some of these rules we're talking about, the government and lawyers could take your house, your car, your personal assets are online, not just company assets, not just plan assets, your personal assets could be online. So for that reason, we tend to work with clients to implement on the investment side. There's things called 321 fiduciary services and 338 fiduciary services to greatly reduce the liability and the work it takes to monitor an investment menu and make sure they're good investment choices. But on the other side, administrative details regarding retirement plans are big deals. And this 316 fiduciary administrative services is a service that we can now offer in partnership with a group we're working with called Latitude Retirement. And hiring a 316 plan fiduciary allows the employer to delegate some significant amount of their responsibilities and limits their fiduciary responsibility as well as their overall just burden for running the plan. In other words, the fiduciary, if they sign on as a 316 fiduciary, they're going to take a lot of steps off your plate as a plan sponsor. So that's something to consider. We can give you a feel for some of the things that a 316 fiduciary can do. They can review all the forms. They can make sure notices are going out on time, because plans have notices that must go to participants. Maybe your record keeper provides some of those notices to you, but do they make sure they get out on time? The 316 fiduciary can integrate with payroll so that they're monitoring those payroll contributions to make sure they're done logically and on time. For example, if a typical payroll runs and you have $10,000 total going into the 401k for all the employees in your plan, and a payroll runs and we see $20,000 going into the 401k on that particular payroll, that could be fine, it could be legal, but it also could be a sign that somebody typed something wrong, just an error. When you have these fiduciary guidelines in place and these services in place, you're going to have people monitoring that, actually looking for distinctions between 1 month to the next in terms of what you do. Another big benefit of a 316 fiduciary is that they can actually review, approve, and sign the Form 5500, which is the form that has to go into the government every year summarizing the aspects of your plan. So there's a lot more services that could be outsourced to the 316 fiduciary. They could be outsourced piece or in whole as works best for you. And again, that's part of the job of the advisor, is to help you determine what level of 316 fiduciary services is going to be best for you for a cost that works well for your organization.
So that's helpful, and I'm still going to ask you, I know I've asked you this before, I still need a paragraph on each one of those, 316, 321, and 338. It's on record now, so you have to do that for me, because I don't know it like you do. However, when you were just talking about that, something came to mind in story time for just a second. So I'm talking with a prospect the other day, yesterday, and these folks are looking at us potentially for human resources and for payroll. Those are the two biggest pain points that they have. And when I asked them specifically about payroll, have they ever had any issues with payroll, and what's the pain there? He mentioned, yeah, there were a couple of times last year where the money wasn't moved promptly, I think was the word he used, promptly to the 401k plan. And they got, as he said it again, they got dinged for that. And I think it was more on him than it was on anybody else in this whole scenario. I think he was framing it that way. But one of the ways we as the benefit companies can help eliminate that from happening is because we can integrate all that here in-house.
Sure.
So if we are already in control of payroll, we're going to make sure the money gets moved. There's never going to be that issue where the money doesn't get moved in a prompt manner. And like you said, we have the extra set of eyes to know if it's the payroll amount is correct. And if it seems off, we would question it before we even push it through. So we're pretty much taking that whole piece out of the puzzle or the problem area by doing it in-house. So it was just an interesting conversation because he felt good about his 401k plan, but did admit that there had been an issue. So we'll probably get to that down the road. But that's just going back to pointing out how important it is that payroll knows what's going on and knows how to monitor and keep track of the money in the correct bucket for every one of these types of scenarios we talked about today and going forward, because if it's wrong, the corrections are going to cause these dings to happen.
I think you hit on two points that I love to hit on here, because there's something there in each one of those. Number one is the timing of contributions into the 401k plan. This is something, if you think about the Department of Labor, the IRS, the government in general, they're always looking for revenue, right? They always want more money. One of the easiest ways for them to get revenue is find a company that has late contributions. In other words, money's been pulled out but not sent into the provider for the retirement plan. If they can document late contributions, they're going to ding you. So this is something we're having the payroll integrated with the 401k and having that extra set of eyes to make sure it's happening on a timely basis could be a big benefit. So when you look at what's going to help you as a plan sponsor, eliminate some headaches, get rid of the headaches about worrying about the timing of your contributions, because that's what they're going to look at first and foremost is, are those contributions timely?
All right. So I think we've covered about everything we wanted to on Secure 2.0. Anything else come to mind that you wanted to make sure? Let's go back and review. What are the new numbers for 2023 as far as contributions and limits? So go through it one more time.
Yeah. So we've talked a lot here today, try to help people know there's something coming. Remember this, with Secure 2.0, the act is going to be implemented in stages. You don't have to remember every single step of the stages. Just you can call on us, you know, call on your attorneys, whatever. Make sure you know what's coming and when it's coming. But specifically for 2023, the normal 401k contribution limit has been raised to $22,500. And I have an asterisk on my notes here because some companies have to go through this testing, and highly compensated employees might be restricted in terms of how much they put in. But the normal contribution, $22,500. The catch-up contribution limit is $7,500, and that's going into effect right away. Those changes we talked about for 60-year-olds and 63-year-olds, those come in a year or so down the line. The defined contribution plan contribution limit is $66,000. And this is a really important number for plan sponsors to know, because if you're sitting here listening to this presentation and you have a plan and you're putting away money and you're saying, you know what, I just wish I could get more tax write-off. I just wish I could get more money put away for retirement and I'm maxing out, but you think the $22,500 is the max. Just know this, depending on how a plan is designed, it could be potentially possible to get up to $66,000 a year put away in that retirement plan. And the last thing is, from what I saw, the highly compensated definition this year is $150,000. So some of these rules and regs are related to people highly compensated or non-highly compensated.
All right. Thanks for that, Paul. So we're going to talk about this again, and probably sooner rather than later, because not only are there changes in this year, but there's more changes coming down the road. There is going to be, how do we actually implement this and get it done? Because we haven't talked about that yet. We just talked about what it is. So there will be, what would it be? Parameters, guidelines on how
guidelines,
to do this as
yes.
it comes along.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that's still coming. And again, keeping in mind that the lawyers and legislators don't understand the process, will help help you understand how the process works so you can actually get this done and stay compliant and not run into problems and actually benefit your people, which is the goal. Anything else come to mind, Paul?
I think the last thing for me to close on is the fact that companies put these kind of plans in to help attract and retain long service key employees, people who are really valuable to the company. And these new Secure Act rules and regulations actually could help enhance the plan, make it even more attractive to people in your organization. So I think more than ever, if you don't have a plan, talk about getting one put in. It could be something that can really be a nice added benefit you're offering. If you already have a plan, ask yourself if your people understand the benefit that they're getting, because educating people about what they have is a big piece of this puzzle. So all these things are out there, all these things are available. For example, with that emergency savings provision, if it's in a plan but nobody knows it's there, you know, how much does that benefit them?
Got it. All right. So thanks for that, Paul. For more information about us, the benefit companies, or our retirement plan team and all the things that we offer here, go to connectandsimplify.com or contact Paul directly at pdowd@benetrack.com. That's P-D-O-W-D at Benetrack, B-E-N-E-T-R-A-K.com. Thanks for listening. Be well.
Kurt Otto here for Benefit Companies. How much better would life be with a dozen on-staff experts glad to be responsible and accountable for human resources, payroll, benefits, insurance, and regulatory compliance? Experts current on regulations, able to answer any question accurately, working diligently, implementing efficiency, saving business and employees time, frustration, fear, and money. Insource the Benefit Companies. We connect and simplify every aspect of business administration. Insource the Benefit Company. Connectandsimplify.com.